Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports' daily NFL podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. Happy to be rolling right on through the offseason ranks. We're past the holiday, counting down days until training camp. And we got offensive linemen up today to join us to break down offensive linemen. The best offensive lineman analyst in the media, Jeff Schwartz. What's up? How do you like that intro?
Oh, that's fantastic. I don't know if I could get a better one. I appreciate always being the best. And offensive line, obviously, is the best position in all of sports. And the best part about all this, training camp, you're right. It's like 10 days away for the Broncos.
All right, so that's right. Yeah, so you're right. It's very, very close. You are currently still at Action Network and still at SB Nation, right? I probably should have asked you that beforehand. But
I'm at SB Nation for CERN. I do Pac-12 radio on Sirius XM every day. And I believe my website is launching. Might be launching today. This might be the breaking part of it. SchwartzNFL.com. Action Network, probably not so much in the future.
But
everything you can find out what I'm doing is at SchwartzNFL.com.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. That's a good idea. I mean, it is. Is it tough to like deal with the fact that, I mean, what percent of media members, and you can lump me in with this, because I don't think there are very many people who actually understand how to analyze offensive line play, but like, what percentage of NFL media members really understand a significant portion of the nuances that come with offensive line play?
Well, not many. I mean, there's a couple. Brandon Thorne is pretty good. I think he's at Veteran Scout on Twitter. My buddy Duke Mannyweather, who trains a lot of offensive linemen. We're doing O-line masterminds this weekend. Did it last year. 30 NFL offensive linemen will be top five. There'll be like five of the top 30 college offensive linemen will be there this year as well. We break down film. We do drills. Same as the Von Miller Summit for Defensive Line. Just for whatever reason, does not get as much attention. Maybe it's not Von Miller. But we will have – my brother will be there. Lane Johnson will be there. Terron Armstead will be there. So a lot of – I think Zach Martin might be there this year. I mean, a lot of – outstanding offensive lineman. Quinn Nelson, I mean, may or may not be there. So there's a lot of all-pro type linemen at this event. So those two guys do well. It's hard because you have to really devote your time to just offensive line. Like Brandon, for example, really just studies offensive defensive linemen. It's hard to be an overall studier of football and then also be offensive line expert. I can't because I've played the position and I know what's going on, but for someone who hasn't really played the position, it's hard to be an offensive line guy and also know and watch everything about the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is like, even when, and like, I think I can do a decent job, you know, if I'm going back and watching a game, I can be like, oh, okay, this guy did a really good job, you know, doing this, blocking this guy, you know, operating the scheme of things. But even like, I'll see that like, oh, this, you know, this offensive lineman got, you know, destroyed by this defensive lineman. And then I'll get a, you know, tweets from people who, you know, you'll be like, no, actually he tripped on his foot. You know what I mean? I just think there's so many nuances that go with the position that it is, it can be in fact difficult to analyze, but we're going to try anyway. And, we have a top 10 list of offensive line units on CBSSports.com. You have said that the move, and I think this is the right move, and maybe I should have told my bosses this beforehand, but the move is to actually do it in tiers instead of a 1 through 10 list. So we're going to work backwards here when going through that. And we have, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's really like when you look at the teams, there's a tier 1 and a tier 2, and then there's a bunch of fringe teams that could really be in that like 8, 9, 10 range that we're going to talk about. The first one that I want to mention, because I'm curious what you think about it. You threw them out there when we were talking about this on DM, but the Carolina Panthers probably don't make your top 10 list, but the fact that a team that's been so bad on the offensive line for so long, you know, I mean, look, you know, they had the, you know, they're losing Ryan Khalil. They had to start Matt Khalil for a while. Now suddenly could be on an honorable mention. I think it's a very fascinating thing when you talk about protecting Cam Newton.
Well, I think there's a couple teams, the Panthers, the Falcons, and the Rams, that are in the kind of, they're not in the second tier, but they easily with like young players and players off of injury and within 8 games this year can kind of be in that second tier of offensive line. You mentioned the Panthers. Look, they needed a left tackle. They have Taylor Moen there, but they drafted Greg Little. Really high athletic upside offensive lineman. Put him right at left tackle. He's not there and now at the ones. And Taylor Moen goes to guard, which might be his better position. you lost Ron Coyle, but you signed Matt Paredes. Trey Turner is a very good right guard. And then Darrell Williams, who was an all-pro a couple of years ago, injured, back now at right tackle. That is a good offensive line, at least by talent. So we have to see kind of how the Darrell Williams off an injury. You know, Greg Little is a rookie. Does Taylor Moon move to guard? So they have potential to be a really good offensive line, maybe the better offensive line they've had in a long time. But, again, it's a lot of potential, and that's why you really – they're hard to put into, like, a tier right now. They're more like in my potentially could be good tier.
Like a surprising – like this team could make a leap into the a team that could be our top 10. You mentioned the Falcons as well. How hard is it for a team – like Atlanta, and they went out and they used two first-round picks on offensive linemen, Chris Lindstrom out of Boston College at right guard, and then Caleb McGarry, ostensibly to be their right tackle out of UCLA. I mean, how hard is it to plug two rookies on that right side and expect them to be effective from day one, even when you have so many other veteran pieces around them? Like, you know, we know they're not going to be, you know, not lifting up this offensive line. You got Jake Matthews, a former first-rounder, Alex Mack there as well, and then James Carpenter, I would assume, at left guard. But how tough is that for those two young guys, you think?
Well, it's going to be tough. You know, Lindstrom at least will play guard. He gets the benefit of playing next to Alex Mack, which would be really helpful for him. But then, obviously, Caleb McGarry out of Washington, who really shot the draft boards fast. I mean, he was a guy that was, you know, maybe everyone thought kind of third, fourth round, and all of a sudden, boom, went day one to the Falcons. So it's going to be a learning process for the right side. You team up together, you hope they can kind of learn on the fly. Like I said, with Alex Mack there in the center, that they will – you know, that'll help Lindstrom, but, you know, McGarry will have to kind of find his own way. Again, this is a unit that with Matthews and Carpenter and Mack and Lindstrom and McGarry, if they play up to their ability, they're going to be a good offensive line. So I put them kind of in like the tentative, you know, how will the rookies play type of offensive line, because they're very talented. You got to kind of put it all together. I don't have a great answer for how long it takes for the offensive line to get going, but the run game, all the zone, you know, keeping kind of simple-ish concepts. Running zone is not simple, but, you know, they don't do a lot of different run schemes. They'll be very helpful. They're big in play-action pass. They're big in boots. So they help their young offensive line kind of not have one-on-one situations very often in the pass game. Side note, the Falcons are going to be good this year. No offensive line podcast. They don't play outside to November 17th, like somewhere in mid-November. Matt Ryan's going to have a big year, in my opinion, as well. He's going to throw for 5,000 yards.
They don't go outside. Is that right about the outside thing? I hadn't even looked at that. That's a great call.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah,
Vikings, Vikings, Colts, Texans, Cardinals. Yeah. Wow.
So, I mean, they can open the roof somewhere, but probably not.
Yeah, I mean, the Colts could open the roof, but that doesn't really affect anybody. The Vikings can't open that roof because it's up perpetually 5 degrees in Minnesota. And I guess the Texans could do it as well. But even then, and the Cardinals too, but like none of those spots really affect people when you open the roof. So their first outdoor game is November 17th against the Panthers. Man, how has nobody discussed this in the pantheon? Okay, you have clearly, right. But I mean, like this is like
one of the reasons why. As I'm beginning to like to get into more of my previewing, especially with the gambling stuff as we head toward, I'm still doing gambling, even though I might not do so much with Action Network. The Falcons, you know, Matt Ryan leading the league as a passer. His odds are up there, like for better odds to win, because he should throw for 5,000 yards.
Sure.
Falcons to win the South. I mean, there's a lot of good props with the Falcons because they have an easy schedule.
Do you think that? Because I actually think the Saints can come back to earth a little bit. We'll get to their offensive line in a second. Now I'm looking at this. Now I'm trying to find this with the lead, the most passing yards. Matt Ryan's actually the favorite, along with Patrick Mahomes at +450.
He moved in the last couple of weeks. I originally looked at he was not the favorite, but I think that he threw for 4,900 yards last year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and I get why Mahomes is there. I would expect some regression there. We'll get to them in a second too. Interesting. What do you, just while we're talking about the South, not that anybody thinks the Buccaneers have some great offensive line or anything, but when you look at like the difference between operating in a Norv Turner scheme and a Bruce Arians scheme, and Norv sort of adjusted what he did for Cam Newton last year to make it shorter drops and quicker passes. I mean, what do you think Bruce Arians is going to do with Jameis Winston and an offensive line that's okay but not great? Like, how will he adjust? Will he just try and be Bruce and make Jameis Winston yes. drop back and no risk it, no biscuit?
Yes. I mean, he's going to be the Zach coach has always been and let Winston use his arm. I mean, that's what he has. Obviously, he throws a ton of interceptions,
yeah.
but being able to use his big arm and let him throw the ball, because that's what Bruce has always done. He's always been high flying down the field, some max protection type stuff at times to help his offensive line, but he's going to take shots. That's what he's always been, and I expect that to not change at all with Winston at quarterback.
Okay. Moving along to where would you I think you had the Rams in an honorable, I'm sort of, instead of running through this list, I'm just kind of curious about your thoughts about various teams. But like, you mentioned that the Rams are probably right there on the fringe, maybe. Andrew Whitworth has been one of the best free agent signings of the past 5 or 6 years. Yeah. It's incredible the way that he's kept his body up and maintained his level of play. They did lose a couple of guys in that line this offseason.
Right.
How much do you think the transition there, swapping guys in and out, matters in a McVay-style scheme?
Well, it does matter. I mean, that's kind of why they're in this tier of, like, wait and see, where they have been very good, obviously. And, look, they were exposed a little bit, especially the center position in the Super Bowl. But, they have two really good tackles, and you mentioned Whitworth and Havistein. Blythe at right guard played well last year at certain times, but they have to replace a center and a left guard. And so those are the areas where, if they come along quickly, they're going to be a good offensive line. That's why I put them with the Falcons and Panthers. It's like a wait-and-see unit that on paper they look like they can be really good, but let's kind of wait and see how the young guys come along before I can kind of put them in a tier.
I think that was it for like your bottom tier, right? Carolina,
yeah,
LA,
yeah.
And what about the Chargers? Do you buy or sell the Chargers offensive line? Because it looked like a team that might be pretty good for much of last year, and then sort of fell apart in terms of pass protection on Phillip Rivers down the stretch a little bit.
Well, the right side of their offensive line is pretty brutal. I mean, you saw in the Patriots game, the playoff game, they really just took advantage of that right side. Now, maybe Forrest Lamp can come back and kind of help them out, but right now that right side just ain't doing it. Palancy's good. Okung's still playing at a high level, but that right side is so suspect. We'll get to another team later that you're really high on that kind of, I think, has the same, not as bad, but I can't put them in that top tier until I see a little bit more from the right side of their line.
Okay. Let's go to that next tier. That's sort of the first group that you had, the Panthers, the Rams, and the Falcons, sort of that honorable mention tier, that right around top 10 tier. Wouldn't be surprised if they took a step forward or a step back. And then you have a group of four teams in your, the middle, we'll call it the middle class. At the bottom, I don't know if it's, I think this is your.
No, order. No, they're not really in order.
Gotcha.
They're not in order in the tiers. It just kind of, I think it's so hard, especially before the season, to say, like, this is the best, here's the second best, here's the third, with the offensive line. Because, like, look, you see, like, even for the first three, there's so many moving parts here that it's hard to just say, like, this is kind of where I feel like the next tier we're going to is, like, second tier of units. And it'll be, and I feel like the top five that I have at the very top, I feel very good in those five. And some of these, some of these tier two teams can take a really big jump and get into that tier one level in half a year probably.
Okay, who's most likely? These are the four teams that you listed: Indianapolis, Green Bay, Chicago, and Kansas City. Out of those four teams, who is most likely to be considered elite next year?
Probably the Colts, and I know that some people have them already as being elite. But like I mentioned with the right side of the Chargers offensive line, we just need to see a little bit more from the right side of the Colts offensive line. We know, obviously, Quinn Nelson's really good. Gonzano's good. Ryan Kelly is really good at center, obviously. But just seeing a little bit more from the right side of that offensive line will kind of put them, over the top. They're not far from being in that unit, in that category, as a top-tier offensive line. It just wasn't – we'll get to the top, and you'll see kind of, like, there is a big delineation, in my opinion, between, like, the top five and then kind of the Colts. The Colts, I feel like, maybe the Packers – who we'll get to next, are really close to kind of like breaking through into that top tier.
Well, all right, so they might be even that top of this middle tier group. What did you see from Quentin? Like, have you seen anything like you saw from Quentin Nelson in terms of a first year player? You repeatedly pointed out on Twitter, like, he's teabagging everybody left and right. He comes in, yeah, first year all pro. I mean, I know we've seen it before, but like, it's been a while since someone's been able to come in and play that position out of the box that well, right?
Well, I think that's kind of what it was. His first couple of games weren't like as great as I think people thought they were. There were times in the games where he was really good. Mm. That stands out. He improved as the season went on. But what's impressive in my mind about him was his attitude. So his attitude of finishing and being physical, I think, really quickly became what their offensive line was. They all took the identity of a rookie offensive lineman, which is remarkable, because yeah, rookies typically, offensive linemen, just, you know, you're not really allowed to talk. You just go about your business, and you're kind of scared, not scared is the wrong word, anxious, nervous, playing. Like, you can't find your voice. And Quentin Nelson found his voice as fast as possible. And that to me was most impressive, and just his attitude towards football. I hung out with him a little bit, you know, in this event in June. He's just a meathead, man. He loves football. he's like that guy, like that offensive lineman. So that makes him special. And like I said, the right side of the offensive line, I think, will really be able, if they come together next year, like I think they should, that they'll be an elite unit next year.
Do you think the Colts, it's even a situation where maybe they caught people by surprise because they had two rookies starting in Braden Smith and Nelson? They also operated this system that, you know, Frank Reich, you know, had Andrew Luck tossing the ball a ton of times, but he wasn't throwing it really far down the field, sort of like what the Panthers did with Cam. And then they kind of shifted midway through the season and became, or actually I guess like a quarter of the way into the season, became this like running behemoth, and it fit what Nelson wants to do. And, you know, they're doing the pulls with Braden Smith, which is what he ran, yeah, at Auburn and all that stuff. I mean, is it possible that they even maybe take a step back because people sort of know what's coming now?
No. So here's what I think happens with the Colts, and this happens very often. It happens year to year in offenses, but really with a new offense. So, you know, Frank Reich gets there, installs an offense, and he thinks we're going to run these type of plays. This is the type of identity we're going to be. You know, he has in his mind, this is what I want my offense to be. And then you realize, like, through four, five, six games, well, we're not really maybe good at what I want to do. We're good at other things. So let's run those plays instead. And it takes time to figure that out. And so eventually they figure that out. Hey, we're going to be this type of team. And he made that transition to be that type of team. And that's not surprising at all how that kind of switch was flipped very fast.
Okay. All right. Also in this tier of teams that we mentioned, Green Bay and Chicago, two NFC North teams. Yeah. What strikes you about these units? And do you think that there will be a transition? You know, I mean, David Bakhtiari was fantastic. Corey Lindsey, when he's healthy, excellent center. I mean, are these guys – does the change in scheme here with Matt LaFleur coming in and Mike McCarthy and that scheme they've had forever moving out, do you think we could see a slow start in Green Bay?
We could see a slow start. I mean, with any new scheme, it does take a while, especially offensively, to get in a rhythm. But, you know, Bakhtiari is the best left tackle in the NFL. Oh, wow. It's really wild. He's never made a Pro Bowl. Like, it's crazy.
It is wild.
I would say he's the best pass-blocking offensive lineman in the NFL. It's just an amazing job pass blocking. But I think injuries is a concern. You mentioned when Lindsey's healthy, right? Belaga's has some injury concerns as well. So I think the unknown as far as what their offense is going to be, how they, you know, if they're going to stay healthy. But like I said, I don't know if they're ever going to break in that top tier of offensive lines, because they're a lot of guys have reached their potential, right? Belaga and Bakhtiari and Lindsey have linked it. They've all reached their potential, in my opinion, which is very good offensive line still. But I don't see them, unlike the Colts, where guys are still kind of young and figuring it out. The Packers are kind of where they are now. They're probably not going to move out of tier two, and they probably won't move up into tier one.
All right. In fact, instead of the NFC North segue, I'll just use the Matt Nagy, Andy Reid combo. You know the scheme well. Your brother plays in it for Kansas City. Mitchell Schwartz, their excellent right tackle. How do you compare these two offensive lines? Because they are running similar schemes. I assume you would take Kansas City over Chicago, you know, brother tiebreaker and all, right?
Well, I mean, with Kansas City, you know, you got to replace obviously your center and Mitch Morris, which is a big kind of production. You have to figure out how to do that there. And Cam Irving at left guard, with James Daniels at left guard with the Bears, they're not quite sure. I think, I don't know who's better right now. Right guard with LDT and Kyle Long. Kyle Long, when healthy, is probably better than Larry. My brother, right tackle, is better than Bobby Massey. And then Eric Fisher, while I think he gets too much shit from people, he's improved a lot. He's probably not better than Leno Jr. So it's probably pretty evenly matched when you look at those two offensive lines in terms of compare them.
All right, good stuff. We will take a very quick break, and we'll come back and talk about Jeff's top tier of offensive lines in the NFL.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. Wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former sports center anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
All right, that we got five teams left. Jeff Schwartz joining us. Is it SchwartzNFL.com or?
Yeah. I think it's. I'm gonna look if it's even up now. Thank you. Okay, SchwartzNFL.com should be up.
Website coming soon.
As of
recording.
Coming soon.
But
I got an email this morning that said like we're good to go. And I guess it's not up yet. It's been a long process. Maybe I got a pay to do. I don't know, but. Should be up soon.
Well, but people will be listening to this on Tuesday, July 9th. So it's very possible that while the website isn't up for us, it's up for the people who are listening to it.
Yeah.
What are you planning on? Is it going to be like gambling analysis, offensive line breakdowns? What's the play with the personal website?
Basically the website. So like you said, when I came on, you're like, I do this, this, and this. Instead of saying like, I do all of this, go to my Twitter and see where it's just going to be like an aggregate site for all my stuff.
Oh, so
you
I like
can find like the radio stuff I do, the TV stuff I do, the print I do, appearances, all going to be on one place. So I don't have to just say like, I work for these eight companies and here's my Twitter and blah, blah, blah. It's just a place to find like everything I do. And eventually, hopefully I'll have some original content. But I'm not planning on like starting my own website. With my own content, at least not now.
That's actually a good idea. I've got the same sort of setup on WillBrinson.com, but I think I forgot to renew WillBrinson.com, and like the last thing I posted was, I'm sure that my feed is extremely old. Like, I bet it doesn't even link. I need to go back and update it. So maybe you'll motivate me. It definitely doesn't link to anything current. Maybe you'll motivate me to go check that out. All right, let's talk about this top tier of offensive line groups. The teams that you have listed, the Patriots, the Saints, the Eagles, the Steelers, and the Cowboys. I don't think any of those guys are necessarily surprising. The one that maybe stood out to me when we were talking about this offline was the Saints, because my concern when I ranked him, and I ranked him pretty low, was that Max Unger was retiring. However, you've got sort of, I don't want to say inside info, but you seem pretty bullish on rookie Eric McCoy out of Texas A&M.
Well, think about this. Even if Eric McCoy is not even good, they still have four very good offensive linemen.
Yeah.
Like, to drop them just because one left, and I know Max Unger, a good buddy of mine. We came in the same year at Oregon together. I put every snap at Oregon with him. He's a fantastic football player. He's been with Drew Brees for a while now. It was a great trade for the Saints to get him over there from Seattle. But you still have Teron Armstead, who's healthy this year, Andres Pete, Larry Warford, Ryan Ramczyk. Like, you still have a great offensive line. You put an Eric McCoy now from A&M, who is, I think he had some of the best explosive numbers at the combine as far as his vertical, his 10 yards, very explosive player, very smart player. I believe he was a 4-year starter in college, played 50 games in college. So he'll fit in very well, I think, with Drew Brees. It'll take some time to get him used to being with Drew Brees and being the guy who's making all the calls and whatnot. And it's not going to be an easy transition, but I don't think the drop-off is as far as people would expect when you lose a guy like Max and you can replace him with Eric McCoy.
Interesting. Would you rather have a veteran quarterback and a rookie center, or a veteran center and a rookie quarterback? And I understand that it's not that cut and dry.
Ooh, veteran center quarterback. You mean it?
Like, which one's more likely to be a disaster? Because I feel like Drew Brees.
The bigger disaster is the rookie center, because there's a lot put on the center's plate as far as especially in protections, figuring things out and just getting the snap up. And quarterbacks don't take very kindly to bad snaps and poor identifications that get them killed. So a good veteran center can really help a young quarterback. A young quarterback's not helping a young center is not helping a quarterback at all. So it's probably more ideal to have that young quarterback with a really good center, but that's not where they are right now. But again, I see them being an offensive line still going to be very good.
No, I agree with you. I think I would reassess it after talking to you, and I might go cheat and change my rankings. The Eagles, I'm not even kidding. Like, even if they've already been published, I don't want it to fall on my head. The Eagles are like the ageless wonders of the NFL. I mean, Lane Johnson even was, 2013 first round pick. Like, it's not like he's really young, although it kind of feels like he is compared to Jason Peters and Jason Kelsey. How worried does that get you with a potential drop off, for Philadelphia based on sort of the age of those guys?
Well, Lane has been healthy. Brandon Brooks at right guard, obviously Kelsey. The only one who has a sign of getting older is Peters.
Yeah.
Who keeps getting hurt every year, but they drafted Andre Dillard to be his replacement at some point. Better probably to sit this year than to go in there, but they still have Big V as well to go play left tackle if needed. They have that young kid, Jordan. I can't pronounce his last name very well. The rugby player.
Mailata. Is it Mailata?
Mailata, yeah. Rugby player who people like kind of where he's – direction he's heading, but they have really good offensive line coaches. And Stoutland, I believe Chung is still there as well. And they're going to be good again. They show no sign of breaking down at all besides, Peter's health at some point.
Okay. All right. I like it. Bullish on the Eagles. I think the Eagles look like a super potential Super Bowl winner as well. I mean,
if Winston stay healthy.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. If you had to pick one, you only get to pick one team out of the Patriots, because these would probably be maybe my top three, maybe not. I don't know. The Patriots, the Steelers, and the Cowboys. Who would you say is the best team? Oh, actually, you know what? I got a different question, because the Patriots and the Steelers to me are a fascinating case study in coaching. How much do you think Mike Munchak's departure from Pittsburgh is going to hurt them relative to the Patriots' ability to keep Dante Scarnecchia there? Like, I don't think people really understand just how much that coaching matters, right?
Oh, it's a huge I think loss for them. I met their offensive line coach about a month ago at this event. I'm sorry, I forget his name. I don't think he's listening, but if he is, he's been there for a long time. So he teaches what Mike Munchak has been teaching. You know, obviously he doesn't, you know, maybe have the experience as Mike did, and that's part of this this whole equation is kind of knowing how to make adjustments and whatnot. And that's really the reason why there's a little bit of trepidation with, you know, putting the Steelers up in this top tier, but they're so talented, right? I mean, that's part of this as well. They've run one type of scheme for so long. They run one play for so long. That double duo play works so well. They're just big-bodied guys moving people off the ball. Obviously, they have a new right tackle, which we'll have to figure out that situation with Gilbert being gone. But, you know, coaching is such a big deal off the line. We saw with the Pacers with Scarnecchia, and he might be one of the better position coaches the last 10, 15 years. You know, they lose Trent Brown. Isaiah Wynn, who they drafted last year, will slide right in. Hopefully he's 100% healthy. Joe Thuney at left guard. By the way, I think David Andrews, a center. Is it Joe or David who's been in the league? Oh, it's Joe. Joe's been in the league 3 years now.
Never not been to a Super Bowl. I know. It's unbelievable, right?
Never. I think he's the first player in NFL history to start his first 3 years and start in three Super Bowls in a row. David Andrews, as tall as they come in center. Shaq Mason had a great year last year. Marcus Cannon, you know, getting up there in age. They're probably going to try to find his replacement soon enough. But I know they drafted Juice from West Virginia as well to maybe take over for Cannon eventually. But with that offensive line coach and the way Brady gets rid of the ball, the way they just pounded the Chiefs and the Chargers and the Rams in the playoffs, they deserve to be probably the top of this list heading into next season. I'd probably put the Cowboys second. You know, Connor Williams at left guard, kind of have to figure out what they're going to do there. Maybe Connor McGovern is at left guard. But the biggest acquisition, in my opinion, in all of football, is not really an acquisition. It's Travis Fetcher coming back at center. The Cowboys last year were completely lost without him, especially with the offensive line coach they had in at the time, who ended up being fired midway through the year. They brought in Mark Colombo, a longtime Cowboy, to take over. They were really good since then, but they just mis-ID'd a lot of things that Travis Frederick would never have made that mistake. I do wonder if Connor Williams having to play now with Frederick and Tyron Smith will play better in his second year. Zach Martin, as good as they come. Lyle Collins needs to work on some things, but nonetheless, still very good. But just having Frederick back and anchoring that offensive line is going to be a huge, huge plus for them.
Wasn't it bizarre that you said this, it made me think of it, but the Bengals and the Cowboys swapped offensive line coaches, and the Bengals offensive line under it's Paul Alexander, right? Had been not very good, and I think it was Pete Prisco that pointed this out, but like basically they take a step back even when they're doing run blocking for whatever reason. And it just seems like the whole decision to flip that up and leading into the year. And it's just kind of crazy to make that swap. And it looked like it actually created negative issues. Now, a bunch of like you said, those guys were hurt, banged up, whatever it is, but.
Well, I think that the Cowboys, and this happens, you know, with coaches, it's not, you know, nepotism is the wrong word, but it's almost like NFL nepotism, right? Like if you coach for 20 years, you kind of just always get a job until you really can't get a job anymore. And
right.
I felt like the Cowboys decided, like, hey, Paul Alexander had been a good coach. And remember, he has really not developed anyone in Cincinnati in the last 7 years or so. But it's Paul Alexander. He's done it. He's coached a lot of, you know, Whitworth and Willie Anderson. He's coached some really good players, and they play well for him. So let's just go with, you know, the name that we know. And he taught nothing like they've been taught before. It just didn't work. And like I said, they brought in Colombo. I believe Colombo's still their offensive line coach now. They're going to be a lot better this year.
Okay. Lastly, the Steelers. Actually, I guess do you think that they have enough talent? And they're loaded up there. I mean, they got the Pouncey, DeCastro, Foster, Villanueva. they have plenty of talent there. Do you think there's enough veterans there to overcome the change in coaching? Because we have seen it. Like, if you follow Mike Munchak around, you can see the ups and downs of those various teams in terms of their offensive line play.
Yeah, I think they'll be fine. We'll find out. There's a I need to look this up. I need to look up the ages of this group. John Clay, ESPN reporter, radio. He brought this up to me last year. He said that there's a rule of 150 with offensive linemen. If you're starting offensive line, if the age is over, you add up the age, combined age over 150, you typically see a big decline in their performance. And his example last year was Atlanta for me. We were talking before the year, and I was like, look, I think Atlanta's going to be good off. It's like, I goes, rule of 150. And I was like, what is that? He's like, if you add up the ages, and Atlanta's offensive line was not as good last year. So we see this offensive line kind of getting up in age with DeCastro now and Pouncey, all those, Ramon Foster. Those guys are at least 30 years old. Luckily, they're younger at right tackle now. I don't think they're quite at 150 yet, but they're getting up in age a little bit.
That makes it a little scary. I kind of like the Steelers to be a...
No, I think the Steelers, here's the thing. The Steelers have run the same run plays for so long now that they'll be fine without Munchak. I think, like I said, with injury-wise, they've been relatively healthy. The guys have not been hurt either.
Right.
So it's just something to look at when we look at offensive lines. I don't think it applies terribly much to the Steelers.
Okay. Really quickly, or however long you want to do it, I am curious. If you had to build an offensive line, like you can take any scheme, any style, pick your coach. You can be the coach. You can be the GM. Someone else can be the coach. Whatever you want to do, but you get to pick five players to put onto the offensive line from around the NFL, any team, any player, any contract. Who would be your five guys? You can move them about positions if you want to, for all I care.
And we're assuming that everyone's like healthy, right?
Yeah. So you get full health, no salary cap. And like, if you want to get Lane Johnson and start him at center, you can do it for intents and purposes of this.
Tyron Smith is the left tackle.
Okay.
If you go in a factory and you type up, prototypical left tackle, and you hit enter, and they build you, that's who he is, right?
Yeah.
Arms go down to his knees. He's 315 pounds. So athletic. Now, injuries are concerned, but for this drill, that's not a problem, right? So Tyron Smith. I think Quinn Nelson at left guard, no-brainer there. Obviously, he's young, but just the physicality and his love for the game, he can make a lot of blocks. He's maybe limited athletically compared to maybe other elite offensive linemen, but nonetheless, I think he's a monster. I would put him there. I think Jason Kelce at center is about as perfect as a center as you can get.
Wow.
He can reach block guys. He can move guys out of the way. Who do you think I was going to say at center?
No. I had Jason Kelce / Matt Paradis when I read. I was like worried when I was writing this down. I was like, what if I come up with a list of five? And Jeff's like, this is the worst list I've ever seen in my effing life. Like,
who do you have at left tackle?
I wrote down Armstead, but I don't know if in my brain I was. Well, I guess I must have been because I was counting. If I had Armstead there, surely I could have thought about Tyron Smith for health reasons. I was putting together my five in a very rushed fashion.
Okay. And who's your left guard? Quinn Nelson?
Yeah, Nelson.
Okay. My center's Kelce. Now, my right guard, you make me pick between these two guys. It's Zach Martin or Marshall Yanda. I mean, Marshall Yanda's probably a Hall of Famer. Quinn Nelson is not yet. I'm not Quinn Nelson. Zach Martin is not yet. I mean, Marshall Yanda is so good. I feel like he's not talked about enough. I don't know if I could choose between those two, honestly. I know that's part of the drill is choosing one. I might lean toward Marshall Yanda over Zach Martin very, very slightly. I just love the way Yanda plays. He's so good. And he's older guy still playing really well.
By the way, this is why, you're like, you talk about Mayweather's thing doesn't get as much buzz as Von Miller's camp. It's like, Marshall Yanda's been to, he's like a two-time All-Pro and went to six straight Pro Bowls, seven total Pro Bowls, has just been grinding out mostly healthy seasons for his entire career, and he isn't talked about at all because he playing the trenches. I mean, it's just not a glorified position,
That to me is two All Pros and six Pro Bowls is not enough to make the Hall of Fame. So maybe he won't be, but I mean he's so darn good. And then look, I'm gonna default to my brother at right tackle. He was obviously first team All Pro last year. But I will say Lane Johnson's fantastic at right tackle for the Eagles. And you know, I think that those two guys, my brother and Lane, will be first and second team All Pro at right tackle for the next 3 or 4 years as long as both stay healthy. I mean, I think that every year you're going to see, you know, Lane might win it. He won it 2 years ago. Mitch won it last year. I mean, they're going to go back and forth the next couple of years. So my first backup really for the offensive line anywhere would be Lane. I mean, in this situation, you could put Lane at 1A, Mitch at 1B, or vice versa. You know, they're really good. They're different styles, Lane and my brother. But my brother's the pass protection, I mean, he's played Von Miller, I think, you know, obviously.
Twice a year. I mean, yeah.
Three years, I mean, he's allowed one sack in 3 years to Von Miller.
Wow.
Maybe two. You know, Khalil Mack switches sides every time he plays them. Bosa's played better than those two against him. My brother's just so good, man. He's so consistent with his pass sets. Kind of a unique vertical set. A lot of people don't really teach that anymore. He's got such good hands. He finishes well around the quarterback. So my brother is such a baller, but I would probably put him, you know, and like I said, I'm equally as impressed with Lane Johnson.
I wrote down your brother just in case you deferred to Lane Johnson. That way I could politely bail you out by selecting your brother. But I mean, this actually makes me feel really good because I had more or less a very similar list to you, and you're a former professional offensive lineman, and I'm just
I feel like the top is not very hard to really talk about the top. I mean, like, you know, like left tackle for me, you know, like Trent Williams would have been acceptable. Just appears would have been acceptable. You know, Tyler Armstead is fine in my opinion. I don't think he's better than those three quite yet. You know, there's kind of like a clear delineation in my opinion on a lot of these positions where, you know, one and two is pretty easy, and then once you get past that, it's really hard to say who's kind of next on that list.
Indeed. All right. Anything else you want to plug? Check out SchwartzNFL.com and plug away. We love plugs here. Promiscuity, like.
SchwartzNFL.com when it's ready, it'll be up hopefully later today, but it'll be up pretty soon. You can find everything I do there, and you know, Twitter at Jeff Schwartz, Jeff with a G. And look, football, it's so close, and then you'll be doing gambling stuff. Not quite sure for the Action Network, but somewhere. Gambling is a ton of fun, and we'll be there pretty soon.
Awesome, man. Jeff Schwartz, follow him on Twitter. Check out SchwartzNFL.com. Thanks, buddy.
All right, take care.